KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
East Oakland.
Emeryville.
Alameda.
Temescal.
Coming up, Oakland and San Francisco have new superintendents. We'll hear what both have in mind for their districts.
We need not only the district, but we actually need the city. We need businesses. We need community-based organizations.
Then a personal testimony of how positive stereotypes about Asian Americans can be harmful for teenagers.
It shouldn't be a newsflash that not all Asian Americans do well in school. But the model minority stereotype makes the actual problems invisible.
And a high school reporter explores a new wave of gourmet boba shops in San Francisco.
The same people that would buy a really nice latte at a Third Wave coffee roaster would also consider boba guys.
We're headed back to school today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Well, we'll start, of course, with reactions to today's solar eclipse with some KALW staffers around the Bay Area and even one in the path of totality.
Hi, this is Jamie Chahaya. I am in the Berkeley Hills standing on top of Indian Rock. No sun, but a dog howled during the moment of totality, and that was pretty cool because I felt like that dog knew what's up.
My name is Barry Mark. I came to McLaren Park to walk my dogs. I was going to see if my dogs were affected by it, but they're already so hyper that it's hard to know if there's any change.
Hi, my name is Emmanuel Tangaloa, security here at Philip Brent High School. I've seen the eclipse here. I took a fast glance when I didn't have good glasses, but when I found the glasses, I took my time. I looked up for like 5 minutes. Beautiful. First time in my life ever seen it. It's something different, and it's awesome. You know, I don't know if I'll ever see that again, but I could say I've seen it.
I am Andy Bosselman. I'm at my dad's place, which is just south of Grand Island, Nebraska. It is not completely dark now. Oh, my God. I'm looking up and can see the corona of the sun, and it's spectacular.
Today was the first day of school for many students, including those in the San Francisco and Oakland Unified School Districts, and both districts have new superintendents. In San Francisco, it's Vincent Matthews. He's local through and through, grew up attending district schools, went to San Francisco State, taught and served as principal at district elementary schools. After serving as a superintendent in several California districts, he's come back home. It's a similar story for Kyla Johnson Trammell, Oakland's new superintendent. She's a third-generation Oaklander, attended local public schools, and worked with the district for 18 years before this assignment. But these homegrown leaders have challenges in store. Johnson Trammell is the latest in what's being called, quote, a revolving door of superintendents in Oakland. The district graduates less than two-thirds of its students and has had to cut its budget by more than $20 million for the next fiscal year. Over in San Francisco, the district is in the midst of contract negotiations with teachers who are not even close to being the highest paid in the region, though they work in the most expensive rental market in the world. Both Vincent Matthews and Kyla Johnson Trammell came into KALW to talk with City Vision's host, Joseph Pache, to talk about their new jobs. And a note to our listeners, KALW is an editorially independent broadcaster licensed by the San Francisco Unified School District.
One of the things that attracted me to San Francisco Unified was our vision statement, Vision 2025, which is a visionary statement about where we want to go and 10 big shifts that we need to make in our district around a graduate profile, what we want our graduates to look like, blended learning, how we bring talent in and how they collaborate, shifts that we as a district have to make if we're going to produce the kind of students that we want. From that Vision 2025 statement comes our strategic plan, which is called Transform Learning, Transform Lives, and both of these can be found on our website. And so what attracted me to San Francisco Unified was both the vision and our strategic plan. And so in coming in and spending my first 90 days, it really is around looking at the activities that we're participating in, the strategies that we put in place, and it is to see what we're doing and then figure out what is working, what's leading us toward our vision, and what isn't. But what I'm really looking for and is when is those common themes that you hear over and over and over again, whether I'm asking the question, what are we doing well that's leading to student success, or what is it that are, what are the barriers we're putting in place to student success? And when people say a barrier over and over again, then I know that that's something that we need to eliminate.
So no pun intended, how unified are the constituents in your district, from the school board to the parents to the teachers to the students, when it comes to these objectives, to this vision?
So the great thing for me is that right now I'm in the 30 days of the 90-day plan, so I'm gathering that information. And that's actually what you just said. At the end of the 90 days, what I will do is deliver to the community a report. And the report is just on that, how unified we are, what is working well, how we're unified around what's working well, and the barriers that we're putting in place, and what are the steps we're going to take to remove those barriers. Right now, the question you just asked is the information that I'm gathering right now.
Same question there for you, Dr. Johnson-Trammell. How unified is your school district when you look at the different constituents that you have to answer to?
So I'd say areas where I would say all constituents are unified is really wanting to make sure our resources are going for our students, and really wanting to interrupt the opportunity gap that we have and ensuring that we have quality education for all students. So I would say the what that we need to be about is where there's a lot of unification. I would say how we get there is where there's diversity and thought and approach. And a lot of that just comes from the diversity of our city, depending on neighborhoods, where there may be certain parts of the city where there's a larger English learner population. There may be certain programs that are more specialized in other parts of the city. And so naturally, depending on some of the issues and the concerns and the interest, there are going to be different challenges that arise, or what might be a priority in one part of the city. There may be something that may be a priority in another part of the city. So similar to what Dr. Matthew stated, just using the beginning of the year to listen both in large groups, sometimes they're forums, sometimes it's more one-on-one groups, sometimes it's small groups, to both students, unions, school constituencies, but also folks within the city, because a lot of our strategic plan is around being a full-service community district and knowing that really to reach the needs of all students, we need not only the district, but we actually need the city. We need businesses. We need community-based organizations. So I've been doing as much listening to the larger city as I have internally so that we can really figure out how we can work best together in service of students.
My understanding is that Oakland Unified, perhaps more so than San Francisco, is projecting to start the year with some teacher gaps, right? Some unfilled teaching positions. What will you bring in your tenure to help solve this problem of retaining people when it comes to cost of living or other barriers?
So in terms of the cost of living, that's a problem that we're in, or a challenge that we're in the beginning of tackling, kind of in partnership with the larger city. But one of the things we've been thinking about is really looking deeper and grow your own programs. That's actually how I started off as a teacher. I started off as an emergency credentialed teacher and was able to land a job, and through a local partnership with Cal State East Bay, was able to gain my credential while I actually was teaching in the classroom, and had the benefit of having some of the teachers, actually they were OUSD educators. So I believe deeply in having more grow your own programs. We have a retention problem, but we also have a recruitment challenge in the sense that we don't have as many teachers going into the field to begin with, because at the state level, we have a teacher shortage. So we've already just started working with partnering with community colleges, looking at folks that are in our after-school program with our talent division. We've started a partnership there and really thinking creatively, how are we reaching out early and in different kind of alternative ways, so to speak, of really attracting folks that are committed to Oakland first, and then providing them the skills to be teachers. So we're going to have to do a lot more investment within the community because we don't have as many people coming into the field of teaching between the cost of living and, you know, just the plethora of other opportunities that are out there for them in the Bay Area.
So it sounds like a long game, really, because you're really developing the pipeline at this point still.
Absolutely.
Mm. And for you, Dr. Matthews, the challenges here, how are you addressing or hope to address cost of living issues?
So we are continuing to increase our pipeline programs, our residency programs. One of the other avenues, though, that we are pursuing is, as a district, is we have partnered with the city to build teacher housing. So we've identified a site, and we're beginning to have conversations with the community about the site. And, you know, I think that as a district, I don't think a district really wants to be in the housing, thinking about all the things that we do. However, we realize that if we, just as we've developed our pipeline, we've developed our teacher preparation programs, we've developed our residency programs, this is another strategy or another activity that if we are going to have the people in place that are going to be delivering high quality instruction to our students, we have to look at all angles, all sides, and do the same kinds of, when we talk about the student profile, one of the attributes that we want for them is to be creative. We also as a district have to be creative.
There are nonprofits that are trying to help teachers with down payments. A nonprofit called Landed just recently got a grant from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. Is this a strategy that your districts will pursue, which is trying to get philanthropic organizations, the tech world, to really try to solve some of these cost of living issues?
I would say absolutely. I think we both have many funders in common that are already funding many of our wonderful initiatives and innovative programs. I've been talking recently to a university around providing some teacher leadership opportunities as a way to provide teacher stipends so we can have some creative ways of subsidizing salaries for teachers. So I think absolutely, you know, we're in kind of the tech capital of the world in terms of startups and innovation and design thinking, and we need to bring that to bear with some of our challenges that we have, right? Because without quality teachers, the issues we were talking about before in terms of equity, we're not able to get to them. So again, kind of back to the work that we've been trying to do in terms of being a full service community district, we have to actually lean in with our partners, our philanthropic community and businesses and community-based organizations, to really work with us where our resources are limited in order to address some of these complex problems.
Kyla Johnson-Trammell is the new superintendent for the Oakland Unified School District. Vincent Matthews is the new superintendent for San Francisco Unified School District. They spoke with KALW's Joseph Pache on the show City Visions. You can find their entire conversation up at KALW.org. That's where you can find links to San Francisco's Vision 2025 and Transform Learning, Transform Lives plans. And you can find the website for the down payment assistance program called Landed. Hear the next edition of City Visions tonight at 7 o'clock right here on KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. With classes starting up across the Bay, many Asian American students are grappling with something you might not expect, being singled out as the, quote, model minority. Youth Radio's Amber Lee is Asian American, and she's been thinking a lot about how even positive stereotypes can affect her experience in the classroom.
There's a joke that an A minus is an Asian F. It's a play on the idea that all Asians are smart. We get good grades, we work hard. Jokes like this can be pretty frustrating for Asian teens. For one thing, it makes us sound like a bunch of high-achieving robots. But moreover, it's just not true for everyone.
How well immigrants do in the U.S. often corresponds to their lives before they immigrated.
I come here with nothing. I don't have English, no English at all.
That's my mom.
Our family is not like have a good education from the country.
My parents never got a formal education. They came here in the early 1990s from Cambodia to escape the Khmer Rouge. The dropout rate for Cambodian-American kids like me is actually really high, 35%. It shouldn't be a newsflash that not all Asian-Americans do well in school, but the model minority stereotype makes the actual problems in these communities invisible.
Hi, can I help you?
Can I get a dozen?
That's a donut hole.
For the last 19 years now, my parents have owned a donut shop in San Francisco.
Want a popira?
My dad carries flour into the back of our shop in 50-pound bags. Both of my parents labor over heavy machinery and boiling oil. They work hard at keeping their business afloat, and by extension, supporting our family. So they're not exactly tiger parents hovering over my homework. But when I'm at school, my teachers and peers still treat me like I'm supposed to be some kind of genius. And I'm not the only one.
I was always expected to be like the top student. And in middle school and in elementary school, I worked really hard to meet that standard because I felt that was what everyone expected of me and I didn't want to let them down.
That's 15-year-old Rhea Park. For her, the model minority myth can make it harder to get the help she needs at school.
Like, even the teachers, whenever I needed help, they'd be like, oh, it's okay, you can figure it out.
I get this too. The pressure I feel about school doesn't come from my family at all. In fact, my mom doesn't even know the stereotype that's supposed to be about her.
Have you ever heard about tiger moms?
No. What's a tiger mom?
So yeah, like, this is like what a tiger mom is. It's like you're super strict, like, oh my god, you have to like go study right now. No playing with your friends. You can't go outside. Like, you have to study, you have to play piano, you have to do the violin.
I cannot do that because I saw you trying to work hard by your homework or your everything, your test. You always try hard by yourself.
My mom says that whenever I talk to her about my grades, I always make it sound like I'm failing. I spent the last 4 years in high school feeling ashamed because I'm a B student. And lately, I've come to see that this invisible pressure I feel is the model minority myth at work. This is how racism operates. It erases our individuality. It tells us how we should act, how we should perform in school. And when we miss the mark, we're failures. That's how even positive-sounding racial stereotypes cause damage.
Reporter Amber Lee is a sophomore at San Francisco State University. Her story was produced by our friends at Youth Radio in Oakland. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. This summer, KALW hosted 4 high school interns from the school district. So this week, we're airing the stories they produced. Are you ready? Let's go. Well, last week, the New York Times found itself under fire for an article. The headline was, quote, "The blobs in your tea? They're supposed to be there." It was about boba tea and how it was a, quote, new trend. Well, they got tons of criticism for 2 reasons. First, the headline, which they've now changed, and the idea that boba was a new trend. Boba tea first appeared in Taiwan in the 1980s. It started as sweet iced milk tea with tapioca balls. But over the past 30 years, it has evolved. It came to San Francisco back in the 90s, and now it's all over the world, from Armenia to Guatemala to South Africa. Shops can have dozens of flavors. And while it's mostly considered an inexpensive sweet treat, a pair of San Francisco spots are now trying to take bubble tea to the next level. KALW high school student reporter Susanna Law sipped her way through San Francisco's new wave shops for boba connoisseurs.
It's hard to miss all the boba tea shops around San Francisco, but the chain of Boba Guys stores try to stand out from the rest. I made a trip to Boba Guys in Hales Valley in the morning to find out more. The windows go all the way up to the ceiling to let in daylight. The work area and the kitchen is in the center of the room, allowing customers to see the whole process. Later in the day, the store will be packed, but the hustle and bustle hasn't begun yet, and the employees are calmly preparing the shop for the day.
Hi, my name is Ben Chen. I'm one of the co-founders of Boba Guys.
Chen grew up with boba.
So I grew up in a small town close to Houston, and it was really, really, really small town. I was one of the only Asians, and so we would go to Houston to kind of get our Chinese food and get other cultural delights. And boba, I remember it was in this small strip mall that also had a Chinese theater and an arcade, and there was a small dessert shop, and that's kind of where the very first time I ever had boba, and it was amazing. It blew my mind.
There are tons of boba stores in San Francisco. So what made Chen and the other co-founder, Andrew Chow, want to start up a boba company?
Because for those that don't know, boba in many places is served with powders and artificial syrups. In 2011, there were very few places that were using real tea. And so we thought, because they call it boba milk tea, why don't they actually use real milk and real tea? We thought that was really peculiar.
Chen also says that, as compared to other boba shops that serve as many as 60 or more flavors, Boba Guys try to focus on 15 to 20 drinks. They say that they serve higher quality boba tea, and they start each day by making toppings to serve fresh to customers.
So for us, we cook tapioca balls for 30 minutes, and then we're constantly stirring it and making sure that it's cooking correctly and evenly. And then we cool it for another 30 minutes. And then it takes another 20 minutes just to soak in our house-made syrup. And so for us, it's very time-consuming, but that's what makes our tapioca balls and our boba so delicious.
Boba Guys charge around $4 to $6 for boba milk tea. That isn't any much higher than most boba shops. And he says that while most boba drinkers are younger, they've been trying to get older people to come into their stores.
Boba Guys has been able to grow on the older age because for us, it's all about the quality. And so the same people that would buy a really nice latte at a Third Wave coffee roaster would also consider Boba Guys maybe for a midday pickup.
While Boba Guys does provide fresh tea and fancier ingredients, they aren't the only ones doing that in San Francisco. One recent event tried to answer the question, what's the world's most expensive bubble tea? A drink that caters to not just those who enjoy drinking bubble tea, but the connoisseurs of bubble tea. In late June, I walk into a Pinterest office in San Francisco and go to the front desk. For San Francisco Design Week, the tea company, Tea Leaves, and the executive chef of San Francisco's fancy St. Regis Hotel collaborated to try and make what they call the world's most expensive bubble tea. And it goes by the name of Boba Tea Shake. They start letting guests into the room. Everyone files in after showing the name tags to the security guard. George Henston works here at Pinterest and found out about this event through the company.
I like boba tea. And I heard this was the most expensive boba tea, so I had to try it out.
Like the 50 other guests, I am excited to be here. I really like boba tea. Everyone is talking and laughing while sipping on the sample teas. Lana Sutherland from Tea Leaves gives a presentation explaining their process. Soon after, everyone begins lining up to get a cup of the boba tea shake. The chef makes the drinks in front of everyone. Wanning Chu is a designer, and she went to a lot of the events at SF Design Week.
Let me taste it, actually. Oh, yeah. So I taste kind of like the whipped cream has a little salted caramel in it. And then as for, let me check the base. It's a very, very light tea. Oh my gosh, the passion fruit is really good.
The next day, I go over to the St. Regis San Francisco to learn more from the creators. St. Regis San Francisco is a luxurious five-star hotel built for high-end clients. Chef Franck Debruchon is the executive chef here.
We're looking for luxury. We have high-profile and high-end customer coming with us. We're targeting somebody who's going to pay his night $700 or $800 a night basically have high, very high expectation. Even though we're going to serve our beef burger in the restaurant, it has to be the best beef burger in the world.
He worked with tea leaves to get the perfect tea.
So the lychee and passion fruit were two different tea at the very beginning of the draft. And after that, I found out that both mixed together with equal amounts was actually doing something very intricate. I say it was a fun challenge. He opened my eyes for a lot of things. He made me discovering a new culture with Taiwanese culture to understand where this boba tea came from and why is it so impactful in a country like the United States. How did he get here?
Lana Sutherland is the CEO and co-founder of the company that makes the tea leaves.
We're known as the tea maker for five-star hotels, Michelin chefs, mixologists, and people just wanting a really great cup of tea in the luxury of their own home.
Despite being based in British Columbia, Tea Leaves came all this way just to participate in SF Design Week, which is an opportunity for designers to showcase their unique works.
That was a great excuse to look at something that's maybe been around for a while, but it hasn't really had something new added to it in terms of layering or flavors. And so bubble tea seemed to be the natural thing.
They have yet to finalize the discussion of whether to sell this product or not. If they do, it'll likely be sold at the lobby lounge of the St. Regis San Francisco. While the future of the world's most expensive bubble tea has yet to be announced, back in Hayes Valley, Boba Guys have set their sight on a big picture.
What we really model ourselves after is companies like Phil's or In-N-Out, which are, they are still have a lot of personality, are fast-growing companies, but still retain a lot of soul. And that's kind of what we aim for as well.
They already have 6 stores in San Francisco, and now they have 3 stores in New York. Along with improving the quality of boba tea, these companies are trying to get people to see boba in a new light. For KLW, I'm Susanna Lowell.